We're this close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Y. That's code Y for new customers to get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, everybody? This is Dwayne Wade. We've taken a little break on the Y because I have 17 jobs, but we're here today and I'm excited to be sitting on a chair, sitting in this chair back in front of these gold microphones with the Y. And I'm excited about today. Today we have one of the most successful execs in entertainment history, a man who went from working as a reporter and a weatherman in New York to becoming the president of ABC and eventually the CEO of Disney. Everybody, please welcome to the Y, Bob Iger. Bob, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being here on my podcast, man. This is a big moment for me.
Are you nervous?
No, not at all.
Good.
No, you're a big deal. So, and the reason I say that, Bob, I go right back to 2019 when I had a meeting here with you. And I remember coming into the meeting and they said, you got 15 minutes. And they was like, he has a big, today Lion King is debuting. It's a big day for Bob. He has the, you had the event that night, the carpet that night, and we had 15 minutes. And our 15 minutes went from 15 to an hour. It was a great conversation that we had. And so I want to thank you for those 15 minutes that turned into an hour, because at that time for me retiring, it was important that I got opportunity to come out here in L.A. and meet with people that I admired, people who, who I was looking for answers of what to do next. And we just sat down and talked about life and we talked about what was next. And so I want to thank you personally for taking that time.
And giving you an hour.
You gave me an hour, bro. I appreciate that. So from 2019 being that day, and I remember it was a lot of conversation around the Lion King. Beyonce was a part of it. If anybody want to know which Lion King I'm talking about, to now this summer, 5 years later. So a lot has happened in between that for you and for I.
Yeah.
So I guess the biggest thing that happened is you retired. You retired in 2020. I retired in 2019. Every day I'm asked, when I see a sports fan, I'm asked, are you going to come back? When are you coming back? And I say, absolutely not. And so you retired in 2020 and you're back. Why?
Well, I retired with all good intentions of staying retired. At that point, I had been CEO of the Walt Disney Company for 15 years, and I'd worked here for then, I don't know, 47 years. I'm now at the company 50 years this year.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like time, and I really wanted to explore life outside of Disney. In fact, I have my license plate on my car says their life after Disney. Around. I want to know what life was like after Disney. I'm sure you had similar curiosity about life after the NBA.
Retire, yes.
You didn't really retire. You stayed pretty active, but it was a big step for you. Anyway, it was the right time, the right thing for me to do. But the person that was chosen as my successor didn't work out. The board of directors made a decision that he needed to go, and they asked me whether I would come back. And given my history with the company, given the love that I have of the company, given the fact that I knew it was a time of great need, I felt I had no choice but to say yes, even though I must say, in terms of managing my time and my life, it wasn't my first choice. But it was an obvious one.
It was an obvious one. Can you explain that love a little bit? I mean, I think some people on the outside will look at it as a position that you've held, but to come back after retirement, after everything that was, was built, in your tenure here, how deep is that love? What does that love mean?
Well, it's really deep. I think it starts with who we are as a company. You know, we primarily create joy, happiness, and magic for people all over the world. Mm-hmm. I just got back from Shanghai yesterday, and I was at Shanghai Disneyland, and I watched, it was about 45,000 people. At the park in Shanghai, having a fantastic time, and just to remind you who we are. And in a world that I think is complicated and challenging, probably nothing is more important than what we do today, is creating happiness. And so when you do that for a living, it's addictive in a way. It's intoxicating. There's something very joyful about being in that business of making people happy.
Makes you feel alive.
It does. It makes you feel alive. It makes you have there's a powerful sense of purpose.
Yeah.
I don't think people really on the outside necessarily understand that. By the way, in many respects, you did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you were playing to win and there was a competitive side to it, but in reality, you were an entertainer. You were doing things that particularly basketball fans like myself really love to watch. And you made us, when you beat teams that I was rooting for, you made me feel so happy, but... So I just think that in terms of a life experience and a life pursuit, is extremely fulfilling.
Yeah.
And I think the love of the company and the love of the job stems mostly from what it is, what it means in the world.
Yeah. Bob, for everybody out there who has not read Bob's first book, it's called The Ride of a Lifetime. And I went and got the book after our meeting because I just thought it was so fascinating getting a chance to talk to someone who has been and accomplished all the things that you have. And so I wanted to get some knowledge. And if I remember correctly, very early in the book, you talk about the opening of Shanghai in China and the call and the moments, right? Like everything that could have went wrong and everything that was developing in that process. And so to just know that you said that you just came from Shanghai, I remember in your book reading about that. And that was my first time kind of getting the information that, what went down to open up, Disney in Shanghai, China. And so everybody, please, I know this book has been out for a while, but it's a great book. If you want to know things about leadership, which I want to know about. And my next question to you, in the midst of this transition that you had from CEO of Disney and another CEO coming in, how's that process? Are you the one that has to pick the CEO? Do you pick your successor? I mean, I know we hear about it, but does it work like that?
Not really, no. It's a board decision.
Okay, so the board picks.
I'm a member of the board, so technically I have one vote.
Okay.
But as you'd expect, the board, and this is true with a lot of companies, typically turns to a CEO, particularly if that CEO has been successful, for advice and for a say in that decision. In this particular case, the board was... leaning very strongly in the direction of staying inside, as they had done with me in 2005, five when I was chosen, someone who really not only knew the company well, but someone that we knew really well and felt that there was much less risk associated with that. And in fact, we felt that we had someone that was fully capable of doing the job and doing it well. So I was a member of the board, and I'd have to say, you know, an integral part of the process.
Yeah,
because the assessment of my successor, you know, they relied a lot on me for, but they also, you know, participated in it too.
Yeah.
By the way, if I can just go back, because you mentioned my book.
Yes.
That came out, I guess, right before we met.
Yeah.
It came out in 19. And it just reminds me because I think I wrote in it at that point, I had been in China 45 times. So I've been back 5 times. So yes, this week was my 50th
visit.
Your
50th time.
50th, yes. That's a lot of mileage, by the way.
It is. I've been a few times myself. Actually, I've been twice already this year, and there's going to be 4 times this year total.
Did you have a sneaker deal there? I can't remember.
Yeah, I thought so. I still do. I spend a lot of time going back and forth. So I don't know if I'm at 50, but I know we got, since 2008 on, I've been going to China pretty much every year besides
long
the
trip.
COVID years. Long trips. So just to pivot from that, I'm trying to think where I was going. But I guess for me, you know, when I think about your journey, is the process that it took for the CEO, right? The process you said with the board, your journey wasn't the same, right? I mean, if I go back and I remember reading, I think they talked about the board really wasn't a big fan of bringing you on as CEO at the time that you came on. Or it was, man, maybe the votes was a little split. Mm-hmm. How was that process for you to become CEO?
It was arduous and challenging. I was the internal candidate, but there were multiple external candidates. And the company had been through a challenging time for probably about 5 years when I was then the COO, the chief operating officer. And I think because of the company's issues in that period of time, they weren't sure whether I had what it takes. And I think they were looking for not more of the same, but they were looking for different.
Yeah.
And so they put me through an extremely arduous process, I think 15 interviews. I was interviewed by every member of the board at least once, some twice, by the entire board twice, by an outside search firm once. And they really, you know, made me, you know, earn the job, not just from the performance that I had, but in terms of my ability to articulate where it was I wanted the company to go, what the key issues were. And I must say, you know, at the time, I guess in a way it's a lot like childbirth. Well, I've never given birth. It was pretty painful.
Yeah.
I felt I was being judged harshly, and I felt that the process was a little bit too long and just a little bit too rigorous. But then I was fortunate in the end. I convinced them I was the right person. I got the job. And then all of a sudden you forget about all the pain. I guess, again, like childbirth, once the kid's born.
Everything is all good now.
Labor is past you and you feel great about it. And actually, as I think back, the rigor that was required really forced me to focus on what would my priorities be. You know, what did the company need most? What needed to be changed? What was good? What wasn't good? And it caused me to, I think, think much more deeply about what I would do when or if I got the role.
Yeah.
And so
it made you look inside a little bit further.
Absolutely. It was good. You know, they say, you know, practice makes perfect or whatever it is. I don't know if I was perfect, but I definitely had to, I remember, you know, one of the early meetings, you know, what are your strategic priorities? And I kind of anticipated a question like that to be answered, but I hadn't really given it that much thought.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all good. It was a discipline that I think ended up being positive for me rather than negative.
Where do you get the goals? Where do you get the confidence to say I'm going to be CEO of Disney? Like, where does it come from?
Well, I think years and years of learning. I've always been a believer of having some ambition, meaning wanting more, but never letting ambition get too far ahead of opportunity. What I mean by that is, you know, when you're really young and starting out, I think it's okay when you believe it's time and you've earned it to have ambition for the next role. But to have ambition to do something 15, 20 years later, you know,
right.
I guess one could argue that could drive you. So I guess as a, you know, 12-year-old kid, you might have had an ambition to play in the NBA, mm-hmm, and that may have driven you. And maybe that's a bad example because it, you know, worked out pretty well for you. I never had the ambition to be the CEO of the Walt Disney Company or of a company.
Right.
I just went to work every day, worked really hard. When I gained the confidence in what I was doing and I gained the confidence of the people I was working for, a gear clicked in or something for me to really go for the next role. So I think at the time, 2004, 2005, when I was being considered, I felt I was really ready because of the job that I had just done and the jobs that I had over all those years.
Uh-huh. And was that president of ABC? Is that the job?
Or I had, yeah. Well, I had a number of them
before.
You know, I was, at one point, I was vice president of programming for ABC Sports, which was at the time before ESPN, like the penultimate television sports organization. Then I was president of ABC Entertainment, which is all primetime programming, which was when I was 37 years old. Then president of ABC, I think when I was 43.
My age, yeah.
And is that how old you are?
Yeah, my age.
You're a youngin'. And then I became president of the company, which was called Capital Cities ABC, when I was 43. Oh, that's when I was 43.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, each job enabled me to gain more confidence. Again, practice not only doing, but practice leading.
Yeah,
which it comes naturally to some people, and I think I had an innate quality to lead, but that I didn't necessarily know that. And it's not until you know it that you can do it,
yeah.
I think. So by the time I became CEO of the Walt Disney Company, all of the jobs that I had before prepared me for it, and I was confident. I wasn't certain I would do it well, but I was confident, that I at least had a shot.
Yeah. What kind of leader would you say you are? If someone is, because perception is reality, right? So whatever the perception is about you as a leader is the reality that the people are going to think. So yeah. What kind of leader would you think you are?
Well, wow. It's going to sound probably a little conceited, but well,
no,
first
it's
of all,
okay, please. We got gold microphones, Bob.
Yeah, I see that. Hope it matches. Interestingly enough, I'm more of an introvert than an extrovert, even though the job forces me on stage all the time to be an extrovert or to act like an extrovert. And I actually think being an introvert has a value because I think a lot internally. I spend time being thoughtful. That means shutting out the noise in the world sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that thoughtfulness is an important component to leadership. It's gaining the knowledge to make smart decisions as a for instance. I think I'm accessible. I think it's really important, even though I have to protect my time, this story you told about giving you 15 minutes, because allocating time is one of the most challenging things about particularly a job, leading a company like this and a job like this. But I like, even if I'm careful at how I allocate my time, I like people to believe that they can touch me and see me and hear what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So open door policy, you can, not everybody in the company can knock on my door and walk in, but a lot of people can. I walk around a lot, so I like being seen. This notion that people can, in a way, touch me, mm-hmm, and get to know who I am is important. I believe you need to be a really good listener.
Yeah.
Being a leader is not always about telling people what to do. It's about hearing what other people think we should do or want to do.
Say that again.
It's almost like a coach in an NBA team. Mm-hmm. I think you tell teams, you give them a lot of instruction and tell them what to do, but I think it's really important to hear what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has to be a two-way street. It has to be balanced. And that's, I try to approach it that way. I'm very decisive. I believe in making decisions on a timely basis and not belaboring decision-making. I'm a risk taker. I'm focused. For instance, I believe that when you're talking to someone, you need to be in the moment and focused, mm-hmm, on who they are and what they're saying. You need to be focused on what your priorities are. You need to be focused on, what are the most important decisions or actions you have to take as a leader. All of those things.
Yeah.
I like to think that I'm kind, but I know I make tough decisions too, sometimes about people, and they may not think I'm so kind.
Yeah.
And then lastly, authenticity is important. You know, being who your true self, who you really are,
yeah,
and not trying to fake it.
I'm glad you said that, because that leads right into my next question. How do you protect Bob from Bob Iger, the CEO? How do you find your personal time? How do you stay safe away from, yes, you want to be the leader that has open door policy, but also to understanding that you cannot allow everybody to come in and give you their thoughts and their, you know, their feelings, their emotions on every decision and everything. So how do you protect yourself? Where's your solitude away from Bob Iger, the CEO?
Well, I carve out, and I'm very, very specific about this. I carve out time every day to be alone with my thoughts. Mm-hmm. I guess people ask me whether I meditate. It's my form of meditation, but a true meditator would probably scoff at this. So I work out every morning alone, almost in the dark. I listen to music, but there's a TV on, but I don't have the sound on.
It's about 4 or 5 a.m. He said in the dark.
Yeah, it's. I get up at mostly 4:30 most mornings. I used to get up at 4:15. I've given myself 15 more minutes. And I work out religiously every morning, and that's my solitude.
Okay.
And I'm amazed at how much I get done in terms of inside my head. I'll think about the day. I'll think about things, my priorities. Sometimes I'll even think about, you know, ideas I might have for a speech that I have to give.
Yeah, it gives you clarity.
It gives me real clarity. Mm-hmm. And even though, you know, you work out to spend energy, I actually think it's energizing.
I agree.
That's really important. I also try to build in time almost each day during the day where I can, you know, just stay on top of things, email, you know, reading, watching. I have to do a lot of watching. And that's also true at night. So even though there are a lot of demands on my time, I say no to many more things than I say yes to.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I like to spend time with my family, and I prioritize that, even though my boys now are out of the house. But I like to be home for dinner, and I may go back to work after dinner. And even when my boys were growing up, and when I was not traveling, I made sure I was home for dinner with them. And then we all went to our rooms to do our homework.
Right.
But I just think compartmentalizing, carving out time, not just for your thoughts, but for your personal life, is critical. Because without it, I don't think you're a complete person.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Wade today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Wade.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Y. That's code Y for new customers to get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
I think something you said is important, and it's a question that I posed to someone recently at a conference in Hong Kong. But to be as successful as you are, to wear all the hats that you wear, that is Bob Iger, the public figure, the CEO, but you also have Bob the husband, Bob the father. How do you deal with the guilt possibly? Because I deal with this, and I'm personally speaking from personal experience of dealing with guilt of trying to be the best at my craft or whatever it is I'm chasing and trying to build for my family, but also missing moments, mm-hmm. not always being able to be there. How have you dealt with, you know, kind of, I guess I call it guilt, but how have you dealt with that situation?
Yeah, painfully in a way. I was married before, and I had two kids with my former wife. We're now in their 40s and have five grandchildren.
Wow.
I have five grandchildren. And when they were really young, and I was working, instead of leading a company, I was working for leaders of a company and leaders of the businesses that I work for. So I had less control of my time. And I was also really, really striving hard to get ahead, you know, to be successful.
Yeah.
And I sacrificed a lot personally. I missed a lot. I think when I was home, I tried to be in the moment, but I know most of the time my head was somewhere else. And as I grew older, and I got divorced, I got remarried, had two kids, I was very conscious about not doing that again, because frankly, the guilt that I had, basically missing moments, I carried through into my late in my years. I still, mm-hmm. I can still think about it, actually just talking about it.
Yeah.
I missed a lot, and I just made myself a promise that I wasn't going to do that again.
Yeah.
When my older son was born, I was already president of ABC, and then I quickly became CEO and president of Disney. And my second son was born a couple of years before I became CEO, and I just decided that I didn't want to create more guilt, but more than that, I wanted to be there for them more. And it was helped a lot by being mature. And I think when you are older and have kids, you have an ability to be more focused.
Yeah.
And I had already achieved, although I still had more that I wanted to achieve. But I think the fact that I did, and I wasn't striving constantly for more, gave me the ability to be a little bit more with them. Because as I think back of my daughters, I might have been with them physically, but not necessarily as much as I needed to be emotionally. Yeah. So I've had that guilt. In terms of my marriage, I'm very lucky that my wife, Willow Bay, has worked throughout our marriage at times in jobs that were just as demanding, if not more so, than mine. And she's currently dean of the Annenberg School of Communication and Journalism.
Yeah,
and that's
talked about.
That's a heavy duty job, and particularly these days, and that makes it a little easier, you know, that she's. You know, sometimes I make her feel guilty a little bit.
She understands when you have to lock in.
And not once, and we talked about the fact that I went to China 50 times. Well, about 47 of those times were since we've been married.
Yeah.
Not once did she say, "What are you doing? You're leaving again?" I just never had that, which is, so it takes a partnership. I'm sure you've discovered the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, you need someone, who understands the sacrifices of doing what we do.
Yeah.
And, but is also willing to speak up for what their needs are. And but I was lucky that she never purposely made me feel guilty.
Well, that's one of the biggest keys. Before I throw it to you, Bob, just to bring it back to Willow, my first time getting a chance to meet her, we were at the Met Gala last year.
Mm-hmm.
Before you go into the Met Gala where the big party is, you kind of walk through this, the art exhibit. And the art exhibit was of Karl Lagerfeld, right? The theme last year. And you, Willow, Gabby, myself, my wife, we all walked together throughout the exhibit. And you and I had, you know, time to look at the beautiful art that, you know, of fashion last year at the Met Gala. So it was cool getting that time, you know, because I know Willow from TV, right? I know her from, you know, being a journalist on TV. And so, you know, it became real. Like, I'm, you know, a fan of people who are very talented and they can do multiple things. And so your wife has, very similar to my wife, has her own life, have her own career, as well as being a mother. And so it's fascinating to me when two big powerhouses, in a sense, they get together and they can make it make sense.
Yeah, I think there's something healthy about that, that Willow doesn't derive any esteem or status from me.
Yeah.
You know, she has her own. And I think that's really healthy. I think I was drawn to her for that reason, in part, that she had her own career. Interesting, just thinking about it, that she, for I think 8 years, was a co-host of NBA Inside Stuff with Ahmad Rashad.
Yes, yes.
The number of times we went to games and a player would say, I used to watch you when I was little.
Yeah, that was
always,
me.
Always made her feel old. But she, from, you know, when I met her, she was doing that. She had her own career.
Yeah.
Ultimately was...
She was great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was fun watching her. Every once in a while, a video will pop up of that. We crack up about it.
It actually made you cooler to me, Bob, when I found out you was married to Willow.
Thank you. Yes, that is a source of a lot of status for me, particularly when I go to NBA games. But, sure. You know, that show is getting getting inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame.
Listen, rightfully so. It was an amazing
and
show.
You were already inducted? Or are you getting?
I got inducted last year.
Yeah,
in August of 23. Yeah. So
I can still remember the suit you wore, knowing it was pretty cool. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why too, but I changed clothes. I did a whole thing. I go over the top, Bob. Bob, do you want to insert an axe?
I do have a question for both of you, actually. Like, what's the fire? Where's the fire for you? Because you both, like, you're president, you're the CEO of one of the biggest companies in the world, and you've reached the mountaintop of NBA start, like, basketballness, but you're still going. Like, you both are still, like, just this fire there that's not stopped. Like, where does that come from? Like, what is that? What's the fire from now?
Yeah, Bob, go ahead.
Well, I there's a lot of fire. I've always had it. We could analyze exactly why and what generated it, but one of the things that amazes me even now, I'm 73 years old, going to be 74. And I've been doing this for a while, as we've said. And I get up every morning still with fire in my belly. I'm incredibly competitive, really competitive, not necessarily with other people, but in general. I'm a perfectionist. I believe working hard is, you know, the true secret sauce to success. But with that comes, I think if you're competitive, you work even harder. You have that fire. To put it in perspective, my dad was a well-educated man, Ivy League education, a talented man, played jazz, professional jazz trumpet player, but he had manic depression and it deprived him of a successful career. And he was always unfulfilled. He was always disappointed in himself. And I've observed that as a young child and throughout. He died about 10 years ago, but I observed that in him, you know, as long as he was alive. And I promised myself I was not going to live a life that was not fulfilling. And I was subconscious. I didn't really understand it as much till I actually started writing my book and had to really come to grips with how do I explain it. But I just knew. I saw his unhappiness and dissatisfaction with himself. And I was driven. The fire, really, I think, comes from not wanting to lead the life that he led. That he was a good person. He was a good father. But he was, you know, never happy. And so I think a lot of it comes from that. If you really want to get, you know, bring the psychology into all this.
Yeah. For me, I so many different things, as you said, but I think where it comes from me is is I don't want the bus to stop here, right? Like, I'm first generation to do everything that I'm doing. And my fire comes through my kids. You know, I go back, Zaire's 22 years old. I've had a fire in my belly for the last 22 years that I can't even explain, that gets me out of bed every day. And, you know, Zaire is my oldest, and I go all the way down to my youngest. And so for me, I guess that fire is in me for them, because I don't want the bus to stop where I am, you know, where we are as a family. You know, I want to know what family offices is like. I want to know what generational success looks like and feel like. I want my family to know those things and feel these things. And so I put a lot of pressures on myself to, you know, not just be successful in the NBA, but to be in all these areas, because, you know, I know that I'm a model for the Wade family. And that fire in my belly to be better every day is not just for myself. It's for a long line of kids that I probably would never meet, because I want to be the, I want to set the standard. And then because I understand in sport, once a standard is set, you're going to work hard to jump over that. Like, LeBron came to all-time scoring leader because Kareem did it, right? And so once these bars are set, it's your job to now, you know, the next generation to try to jump over those bars and clear them. That's how competitive we are. And I want my family to be competitive. So I want to set the bar. And then I want to make sure the generations after know that they have the capabilities and the resources and all the things they need to jump over that bar. And so my desire and everything burns is all based around my family. I feel that that's my purpose in this world, is my family. So
I was going to actually ask you a question when it came up in my head anyway. Sorry. When we were talking about retirement, because I know that to play in the NBA, you have to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know, having gotten to know a few NBA players, yourself, Chris Paul being one, that there are different levels of competition. There are guys who are far more competitive. And I think you'll find that the greats in the league, those that get into the Hall of Fame, were simply more competitive than others.
Obsessed.
And yes. And that comes in the work ethic and everything about it.
Yep.
But then all of a sudden the day comes, and unlike me, it's like, you know, you could do this job a much longer time, because it demands of me physically, but not like yours did.
Yeah.
You got to step back. What do you do, someone as competitive as you, how do you channel that? And you talk about your family. Was that a challenge for you?
Definitely. It's an everyday challenge, right? You know, especially, man, I played basketball from 5 years old on. You know, it was so much for me. And I think one thing I know, Bob, is I'm learning a lot about myself now that I'm getting further and further away from the game. I'm actually learning that I love the game. I love the game with all my heart. But I actually understand that it's not like my dad still plays basketball every day. He's 67 years old. He gets up every morning. He goes play basketball. I don't do that. And I know his knees are worse than mine. And, you know, and I don't do that. And so I'm like, dang, do I love it the way he loves it?
Interesting.
Right. Like, I'm starting to, like, now look at certain things and say, man, I love this game. It's done so much. But I think for me, the game was a moment, you know. And my mom always told me when I was a kid, in the title of my book, that my life was bigger than basketball. And I never knew what that meant. And I think now that I'm on the other side of basketball, I'm starting to understand what that meant. Is I'm not obsessed about that anymore. But what I am obsessed about is, how do I maximize each day? I'm obsessed about maximizing my day and maximizing my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to win so many moments throughout my day, whether it's getting dressed in 20 minutes, I want to win.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see if I can get out the door in 20, right? I'm putting these challenges in front of me. And so I'm taking some of the things that made me a great athlete, and I'm just bringing them into life. Mm-hmm. And trying to make myself, you know, and challenge myself to be a better person.
By the way, that getting out the door in 20 minutes, yeah. I can really relate to that. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
I've never talked to anybody about that. I actually, sometimes I'll count. Like, you know, I just try to be more efficient at things.
It's these little challenges you got to set for yourself.
But it must be how we're wired,
too.
Like, yeah. You know, I do fewer steps to get from one place to the other. If I can do it, I'll do it. I guess maybe it's why we end up doing what we do, because of that mentality.
Yeah. No, I got it is a thing. I put so many challenges in front of myself that no one knows. I am in competition with myself all the time.
You can't even talk about it with people. A lot of people don't understand it.
Don't understand.
And then they think you're crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, to answer your question, Bob, I mean, I guess that's the way that I kind of look at, you know, that I'm trying to, you know, I want to be connected to the game. I think it was a point, and my team noticed, where I was trying to, I don't want to be known as an athlete. I want to be known as a businessman. I want to be taken serious. And then I had to sit back and I had to look at it and say, you know what? Actually, being known as an athlete is actually the best thing, because do you know what I had to overcome to be a great athlete? Do you know the value that I bring by being an athlete? Well, let me tell you. Mm-hmm. And so really bringing everything that I am as an athlete and understanding that I am so unique in every room I walk into, because it's only a handful of us. Mm-hmm. And not try to get yourself away from being an athlete. Or, right. You know, being known as an athlete. No, please know that I was, and please know that I was a champion. Please know that I overcame injury, because now you're going to automatically know something about my character.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Y. That's code Y for new customers to get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You won the championship how many times?
Three.
I was at one. I was in Dallas.
Oh, the one we won.
That was your first
06. One. 06.
Was that your first one?
Yes.
Yeah, I was there.
You were there.
Because ABC and ESPN has, you know, the NBA, and I go to a lot of finals over the years, and my son at the time, 06, was 8, and a big basketball fan. He ended up playing basketball in high school, and he's always roots for teams that are winning. Although he's been a Nick and a Clipper fan most of his life, but he decided to go to the game wearing a Dwayne Wade uniform or jersey
in Dallas.
So we fly from LA to Dallas. He's wearing number 3, that Miami jersey, and we find out that we're sitting courtside. So we get there, and he's in Dallas. He's like one of the few Dallas fans, a few Miami fans at courtside.
It was just our family as fans.
He's getting harassed by the Dallas fans.
I love it.
He's 8 years old. Even the Dallas Mavericks mascot came over.
Especially sitting courtside in Dallas during the finals.
We didn't know we were going to sit courtside. I didn't want him to wear the uniforms. Son, we're going to Dallas. You got to be respectful.
Yeah. Was it the game we actually won?
It was the game you won.
Game 6.
Yeah, it's a game you won.
Wow, June 20th, 2006, Shaq, right? By the way. Yes, I know the date.
June 20th, 2006.
Wow. How excited was he during that win for him? Wearing that jersey, being like, like
I picked the right, right. I picked the right
yeah,
one.
Like, was
I
he
picked,
like at the end of that game? Like, yeah, yeah.
He was elevated. I'm sure. Yeah. He was pretty happy kid.
Man, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, it's funny. Me feel I remember good. It to this day. He'll remember it too.
Yeah. On that same line, are you the father that you thought you were going to be? Right. We all have this idea of who we're going to be if we have kids and what we're going to do. Are you that father?
I've never thought about that. I do think about, you know, my qualities as a father. Yes, am I the father I thought I wanted to be, I was going to be? I think by and large I am, by and large. As I think about it, again, I haven't given much thought, but yeah, I think I've been a good role model. I've been there for my kids. I balance, you know, being kind and disciplining them.
Yeah.
My wife and I both set pretty high standards for them. Yeah, I think pretty much.
You've done a good job of it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd give myself an A+, but I wouldn't do that.
If I could, as we sit here, ask for not only just me, but even the listeners' advice, and I don't know the answer to this, but just listening to you, I know that you have a blended family, mm-hmm. and I know that I have parts of a blended family, and how difficult it is to do that. So any tips, any pointers that you can give me or anyone out here listening, how did you handle and what's the challenges of bringing together family?
Well, I think the most important thing is being empathetic to all members of the family, because not all situations are comfortable. There's sometimes some discomfort in bringing blended families together.
Yeah.
And while I think as parents we set expectations, why isn't everybody happy? You know, why doesn't everybody get this? And you have to realize that people come to blended families with sometimes disappointment and expectations, and it's not always great for everybody. And I think you just have to put yourself in their shoes.
Yeah.
But that would be the most important.
Have more empathy.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I remember, introducing my daughters to my Willow, who became my wife, and then getting to the point where telling them I was going to get married and then telling them we were going to have a child. You can't just expect them to accept it all and smile. You know, you have to really think, well, you know, what are they thinking? They're disappointed in the dissolution of the marriage of their parents and, you know, having someone else in their lives that is a stranger in many respects.
Yeah.
What, you're expected to all of a sudden embrace and love?
Yeah, because you just want everything to just, hey, I love you, let's all love each other.
Why can't everybody get along, right? Yeah. Well, wait a minute, you know, the new family's an interloper to the old family.
Right.
So I think we forget sometimes, you know, how difficult it can be.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remind yourself of that.
Yeah,
thank you for looking, that. I think I was probably less empathetic than I should have been. Now, looking back on it, of course, it's 20/20 hindsight. It's easier to, you know, talk about it, but that would be my strong advice.
Yeah, I thank you for that, because I know a lot of us deal with that, right? In the world today, we all deal with, you know, how to deal with blended families, and then you put all the other things around it, who you are, mm-hmm. you know, and all of those things at the same time. So, thank you for that. This word in sport always come up, and I think we all have a hard time answering it because we don't really know the answer for it. But the word legacy comes up all the time, right? And especially when you got kids, it's all about, you know, your kid's going to follow your footsteps. Or is this your legacy? And how do you look at legacy? And in that same token, does your legacy put any pressures on your kids?
Yeah, definitely. I think I look at legacy two ways. Legacy as a father and as a husband. As a member of a family, and then, of course, there's legacy professionally, and I realize that those lines blur because so much of what I do and what I've accomplished, you know, you bring into my personal life and my legacy as a parent and my legacy as a husband. I'll start professionally. You know, I was really lucky to have been named the sixth CEO of the Walt Disney Company in 2005, a company that was founded by Walt Disney in 1923, you know, known as, you know, one of the greatest companies in the world. And I've always wanted my legacy to be, hey, you were given responsibility to lead this great company. Make sure that you don't screw it up, but yeah. Make sure you leave it in even better hands,
right.
Or in even better shape, rather, for the people that follow you. It's very important to me. Even now, coming back, I realize I'm putting my legacy on the line a little bit, because I left in pretty, you know, with the company was in really good shape, and I don't want to do anything that diminishes that legacy.
Yeah.
So the pressure is on, really, for me to do the same again. I just want to leave this company as one of the most admired companies in the world, mm-hmm. You know, known for the quality and the integrity of the people and the product, the people who work for us and the product that we make. Very important to me. In terms of my legacy as a father and as a husband, you know, I very much would like my family to appreciate my accomplishments, but more importantly, to appreciate the fact that I did that, but still brought a lot of love to the people who matter the most to me,
mm-hmm.
You know, my wife and my kids.
Mm-hmm.
That I was there for them, that I cared about them, that I set a good example, that I set high standards and lived up to them myself.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing right there, living up to them yourself. I, when you said that, it just made me pause. Because that is the biggest thing.
Not just about talking about it.
Yeah, it's about living up to it as well. I mean, it's easy to tell give someone else advice. It's harder to follow that advice yourself.
Yeah, that's right? True. Even, you know, at Disney, I try to walk the talk.
Yeah.
Talk about integrity and relentless pursuit of perfection and, you know, what I demand of the people who work for me. Well, I gotta do the same for myself.
Well, one of the toughest things I think that we all have, that we all deal with and we all have maybe issues with, is self-accountability. How do you deal with self-accountability? Do you look in the mirror and you are honest with yourself, or do you look away from the mirror sometime when you don't want to be honest with yourself?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, and we talked about my father briefly, but I remember when I graduated in elementary school at sixth grade, and we had the yearbooks, and my father wrote in my yearbook a quote from Shakespeare, which was, "To thine own self be true." And it stuck with me. And people ask me over the years, you know, what do you live by? What's your North Star? To thine own self be true. Be true to who you are. That means be true to the words that you speak, be true to what you demand of others, meaning, you know, and be true to yourself. Don't fool. If you start fooling yourself, you're fooling everybody. So I have very high standards for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I disappoint myself a little bit, but I try really hard to live up to the standards that I have for myself.
Yeah.
And I don't beat myself up over shortfalls as much as I use them as lessons to basically even get better. And even to this day, I try to do that.
You said something, and I wrote it down. I want to get your, I love this, by the way. You said, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. Is that kind of similar to what you were just saying right there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the standard that you set, if it's high integrity, for instance, has to be applied to everything you do. Everything. Inconsistency, particularly when it comes to morals, ethics, is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
If you do something that is suggests a lapse of integrity, then theoretically everything's on the table. Everything could be. So that's important to me.
How do you handle, you and I both have something in common, right? And I guess it's we're public figures.
Yes.
Right. Whether you wanted to be or I wanted to be or not, I signed up to play basketball. I didn't sign up to have people talk about a lot of things they talk about. But now we're living in a world where some people actually go find the information where people are talking about them. You can actually go look at comments and you can find people talking about you, which is, I don't do those things. But how do you handle being a public figure?
I try not to let what other, how other people are judging me change how I behave.
Okay.
So first of all, I guess in terms of the public side of it, you know, you can read a lot about yourself. A lot of it isn't even accurate. I try really hard not to read about myself.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Often people hear saying, hey, you read that about such and such. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I don't lead every day, or I don't spend time every day reading about myself. I don't look at comments on Twitter or X, the X platform. And it's just, I don't find that healthy.
Right.
I don't learn anything about myself at all. It comes with the territory that if you're in a, you know, if you're stepping onto a basketball court as a professional basketball player, or if you're the CEO of the Walt Disney Company, you're on stage
You're on stage, yeah.
And the lights are bright. And people are going to scrutinize almost everything you say on or off the court, in this case, on or off the Disney, so-called Disney stage. And that took some getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not who I am. It goes back to the comment I made at the beginning. I'm mostly an introvert.
Yeah.
I don't really want to be on stage. It's part of my job to be on stage, but that, I don't believe that's who I am. So you deal with it. I'm careful in terms of how I behave publicly. I'm conscious of how I present myself, whether it's, you know, how I'm dressed or I remember taking, you know, my boys to restaurants and, you know, little boys don't sit at tables very long and they act up and
run around.
How you discipline them in public.
Yeah.
I was very careful about things like that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember every once in a while I'd raise my voice and my wife would say, you know, you're in a restaurant, don't raise your voice because you think someone might be scrutinizing how you're, you know, basically.
I mean, they will be.
They will be. Anyway, it goes with the territory. I'd say you get used to it. I know you never quite ever quite get used to it. The one thing I try not to do is believe all the stuff that's written about me. I not let it go to my head.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that I learned is the playing sport is the high and low, is the ebb and flow of everything, of the job, of the media. They love you one day, obviously don't love you the next, of people who love you one day, don't love you the next. Like it's a whole, like if you allow your emotions to go on that roller coaster, you can't focus on what you're trying to accomplish and what you're trying to do, because that's going to take all your attention away. And so I learned that as an athlete, it's like, okay, I have to close that part off. Right. Like I know my coaches, I know Spo had this. You know, he had people all the time when you lose some games trying to call him, text him, tell him what he's doing wrong, what he needs to do better. They've never been in one war room. They've never been in one film breakdown. They don't know none of the personalities of the team that they're playing. But you can coach from the phone and tell you, you know. And I think a lot of people are coaching from the sideline in the midst of this being a public figure of our lives, and they're Monday morning quarterbacking and telling, oh, well, you should have done that. Well, this isn't real time.
And I think it's important, too, to not let others define you, but to define who you are yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very interesting. People say don't read everything. Don't believe everything that's written about you. And don't even read it. I think there's value to that.
Off a little away from the so serious, what are you fearful of? Like, I'm fearful of snakes. I'm fearful of birds. What are you fearful of?
Birds, huh?
I can't. Birds. Me and birds, we got a whole history. I'm talking about it's a long history, Bob. I can't even. We'll be here all day if I tell you about it. What are you fearful of?
I don't like snakes, but I'm not fearful of them. I'm not sure I have.
Is there anything that make you?
No, not really. I'm not jumpy.
You're not jumpy?
No.
Well, that goes into why you're so successful.
I used to say I don't have a fear gene, but that gets misinterpreted. I have anxieties every once in a while.
Okay. So what gives you the most anxiety?
Well, I think as you grow older, you become more in tune to just how fragile the world is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something happening to my wife or my kids, I can get anxious about that sometimes. You know, you just think about, you know, you could fate and stepping off the street corner the wrong moment, getting hit by a car. And I'm the fragility of the world, particularly as it relates to my family, would be it.
Biggest
not
regret?
Birds or snakes.
Not birds or snakes. That's me. Now, I mean, I have that same. That would be my my biggest one, but the bird is a snake.
Is there any particular bird?
You know, I really don't like pigeons.
I was going to ask
I
you,
really don't like
there
pigeons
There are a lot
at all.
Of them, too.
Oh, yeah. I don't like when they get close to me. I don't like when they be underneath the table. You ever looked at a pigeon? The closer they get, the uglier they are.
I live in New York a lot, so they're omnipresent in New York. I never understood, by the way, you never see baby pigeons.
Right, you just see big grown adult pigeons.
And a lot of them. Yeah.
I do not like pigeons. Regrets. Do you look at things as having regrets, or do you take it as, you know what, this is a lesson for me, or do you have it?
Well, we touched upon one. You know, I regret that I wasn't there for my daughters.
Your daughters. That's
as much as I could have been, should have been. That would be it.
Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while, I regret not having spent more time to myself and, you know, the old smelling the roses, particularly now, given the fact that I retired. And I stayed busy, but not as busy. And I really enjoyed it. And one of the things that I enjoyed is I finally felt I had time.
Yeah.
That I wasn't rushing to everything all the time, even though I still had that, I got to do something as fast as I possibly can. I guess I regret a little bit that I haven't taken more time for myself.
But would you do it different?
No.
Even though you regret it, would you?
Right? You can't anyway.
Right.
So I don't spend much time basically on that because you can't do it again.
Yeah.
And here I am, you know, back at work, back at the grind, working really hard as I've ever worked. I don't even regret that. Really.
In your 70s, as hard as have ever worked in your 70s.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've ever worked harder. It includes growing up in my 20s and my prior tenure as CEO.
So you think as you get older, you think, you know what, at some point it's going to get easier. I'm going to be able to ride off into this Hawaiian beach life, right? You think one day, and you're telling me as you're sitting here, you're working harder in your 70s than you did in your 20s.
It's interesting. Years back, going back to the early parts of my career, the 70s and the 80s, meaning decades, I worked for bosses who were golfers. and the summer, they play golf every Friday. I think, wow, one day, I don't play golf, but one day, boy, I'm going to, when I get to that, I'm taking Fridays off playing golf or whatever. And then all of a sudden I get there, where are Fridays off? Where's golf?
Right.
How does that happen? I think the world demands more of us. Actually, and these days the pace of change is so rapid, and the challenge is so great. Yeah. There's so much disruption in the world that there's no way you take time off. I take vacations, I get away. Doesn't mean that I'm not working when I'm away, but I get away.
We're going to talk about that vacation as we get to the end, Bob. You have another question for us?
It's mainly because I've always wondered how when I watched TV and I see you on TV, and you kind of mentioned earlier that Disney is like you're in the business of making people happy, and that's such a great thing. And being the leader of that charge, making people happy, but people the outside world trying to make some of the things you do political. How do you balance that? Your job is about trying to make people happy. Like that's what you want to do all around the world.
But and knowing you can't satisfy everybody.
And you can't satisfy people, everyone. And people try to make it, for political gain. How do you balance that?
Well, it's a good one. First of all, I'm not 100% sure I know what you mean, except that I do know that one of the things I've been preaching a lot at Disney is reminding people that our job is to entertain. Where we can entertain, we always want to entertain responsibly, but where we can entertain in a way that has a positive impact on the world, that's a good thing. But our movies and TV shows and theme park attractions, everything shouldn't be designed to deliver messages. They should be designed to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
Going back though, I love it when Disney can tell a great entertaining story.
Yeah.
And have a really positive impact on the world. One of the things I'm most proud of in my tenure as CEO, was making a movie, making Black Panther. We made a Marvel action hero movie with virtually an all-black cast that did over $1 billion in box office, that did well in almost every country it was released in, including China. And the statement that made was phenomenal in terms of acceptance and anybody could be a superhero. And I loved having that kind of impact. Or a movie, Coco, which was about Mexican holiday, Day of the Dead, was an basically an all-Mexican cast. Mm-hmm. And it did extremely well in China, for instance. And just, you know, is a great story, touches the heart. But in that case, it was mostly about having respect for family and elders, particularly grandparents. It's a great positive impact. I love that. But we didn't set out to have a positive impact. You set out to make a good, tell a good story.
Yeah.
And I have to remind all about the creators that we deal with today is tell a great story. That's your number, and entertain by doing
so. You're storytellers.
Absolutely. Yeah. That should be our number one goal. If in telling the story, you know, we have a positive influence on people, on the world, great.
Yeah. I mean, it, to me, what that sounds like is, I mean, also, too, at the same time, from the underbelly is kind of the motto that I live by, and there's so many different ways you can say it, is, but too much is given, much is required. And I think the mentality from the public is you're given this, so you're required to do this. Mm-hmm. And whatever that this is what the public and what people, you know, their expectations of what you're supposed to do, because you've been, you know, you're sitting in this place, you're sitting in this seat, you have this microphone. And so I think it's on you to decide how you use it. But I guess my question to that would be, is there a difference, Bob, between Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, that has a company, to sit on and make sure that, you know, the company has a voice, and also Bob Iger, the person who, like, is it sometimes where your ideas kind of cross, where you may not believe in this as a person, but as a company, you got to stand on that? Or is it the same?
No, I think at this point it's the same.
It's the same.
Yeah, I think I can't. First of all, I can't do anything as a company that I don't believe in morally or okay. I don't believe in as a person.
Yeah.
But I am very aware that Bob Iger without the title is almost the same thing these days as Bob Iger with the title. Like, the title just unfortunately travels deep into my personal life, meaning away from Disney. So if I say anything as a civilian, so to speak,
you might as well say it as a.
It's the same.
It's coming from the CEO.
Same thing. I have to be careful there.
Yeah,
I had to learn that, by the way. You know, taking positions politically, I have a right as a citizen to do that.
Yeah. But
if I say it, if I speak it out loud, it's then people expect or just assume that that's I'm taking a position on behalf of this company. So I don't. No, I don't speak out loud anymore.
Yeah, that's what I was running, exactly that dynamic of, you know, your personal life, your personal interests, but also the company's view of people's, the interests of the company. And how does that ever come to a point where you have to battle you versus you?
Well, that goes back to, you know, the way you do anything is the way you do everything, or whatever, but whatever I wrote.
Yeah, the way you do anything is the way,
the way you do it. Yeah, that's right. It's almost the same thing.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Y. That's code Y for new customers to get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK,
LASIK.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Vacations. So going back to the meeting that I had in your office in 2019, I remember walking in and I'm sitting here thinking, how am I going to extend this meeting with Bob Iger? How are we going to get more than 15 minutes? And so I saw that you love selling. You have sailboats. You have photos of you on a sailboat. You had a, like a sculpture or some sort of a sailboat office. And so I recognized that. And that's where our conversation actually started. Because once you start talking about something you enjoy and love, you lose time. And so that's how we got to an hour.
You manipulated me.
I manipulated you. But I am fascinated. I am very fascinated because, as I said in the meeting, I've been lucky enough to be out on the water vacation, but I've never done it from, I've only done it from a yacht. I've never done it from a sailing standpoint. Can you talk about why you love, you know, taking your, when you get your time away, taking your vacation, being out there on the water on a sailboat? Because that is different than, you know, than a yacht or than a regular boat. What does that do for you? And is that your sanctuary? Is that your moment to be away from everything?
Yes, it is. First of all, I grew up near the ocean. Mm-hmm. I could actually smell the ocean. You know, a warm summer night with the windows open. We didn't have air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And I could smell the ocean in my bedroom. And so I think it's in me. Meaning I've always needed to be somehow or another on the ocean, near the ocean, tied to the ocean, have a view of the ocean from my house here in LA. It's just something about it. And maybe I've got salt water in my bones and in my body. I do like sailing. I've been sailing for a long time. Not quite all my life, but a good, certainly the majority of it. And it's something about, to me, it's being completely in touch with nature. I don't articulate it that way. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm in touch with nature, but I know when I'm on my boat and feel the wind in my hair and my face, and I can smell that salty air. And I am at peace. I am escape.
It's a moment of peace.
It's my escape. Mm-hmm. I'm far from everything. I am I'm in a completely other zone in a way. And it's really refreshing and regenerating to me.
Yeah.
And so I have a sailboat. I've been kind of public about that.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate about that. And I love to sail because you also are so dependent upon forces that are so much bigger than you and so totally uncontrollable.
Yeah.
And I like that challenge too. Well, the wind's not blowing in the right direction. It's not blowing enough. It's blowing too much. There's a storm coming, all of those things. And having to contend with, having to adjust to all of that.
Man.
Love it.
You love it.
I love that.
That's what scares me about the movies I've seen. I've never been on a sailboat, but the movies I've seen and the thought of, man, I've been out on a yacht and the yacht is just rocking. And I feel like we're about to fall either side. And I look at a sailboat and I'm like, they don't like they have as much protection as even this yacht. So when a big storm coming, when this wind is gusty, you don't get nervous. You don't think, oh, this is bad.
Well, we're pretty careful. I'm pretty careful. I'm not a risk taker when it comes to that. Okay. So these days with all the modern technology available, you pretty much can even though I was a weatherman at one point in my life, you know, I rely on others and you stay away from trouble. Every once in a while, it's unavoidable. I remember not long ago, a couple of summers ago, I was in Europe on my boat. Unfortunately, we were anchored and a huge storm blew in. It had blown 70 miles an hour and snapped a big line off the back of the boat. And, you know, I wasn't worried, but I just remember that feeling of being completely, completely vulnerable to nature.
Yeah.
And in a way, there's something healthy about that because I remember someone saying, you know, you don't really ever learn how to sail until you can sail away from land far enough to not see it mm-hmm. and have that sense of vulnerability. I think that's a healthy thing, too, to experience.
I agree.
The feeling of vulnerability.
I agree. I mean, I've been out in the middle of the and I bring this up because this is obviously something that we share, and it's been out in the middle of that water. And I've been out there on jet skis, and I've went so far that nothing was around but just bodies of water. And at first, fear jumped in, and then calmness came
until the pigeon flew
until the pigeon flew on the thing. And something else that we share in which, you know, for me is very important is the moments where I have big decisions to make. I normally go to the beach. I normally walk the shore. I normally touch the water. I need to feel that energy. It's something about the energy of that water that really connects me to myself and gives me an opportunity to take this big decision and make the right choice. And I walk along the shore to do that. I go anywhere in California and I just walk along the beach. Mm-hmm. Mornings, nights, or whatever the case may be. Not too close at night, but you know what I mean. And that's, for me, like you said, is there something about that? It just feels like life. You know, it feels, I can hear all the sounds. I can see everything that's going on. And I'm just, you know, I'm not in my house. I don't have no blinders on. I'm out there in the world. And it's just something about that. It just feels like living to me as well, just being connected to that water.
And big decisions require real clarity of thought.
Yeah.
And the only way you can do that, I think, is to block out the noise.
Yeah.
Whatever that noise is, or to, you know, figure out where you can be alone with your thoughts.
Yeah.
So that you can make good decisions.
And yeah.
I do this, the same with me.
Well, Bob, first of all, I don't know how long I took of your time today. So I know it was more than 15 minutes, so I appreciate you. And as always, I'm going to end my podcast with this question, and you can answer it any way that you see fit. But the name of this is The Why. And, you know, this ain't the end for you. It seems like you're in the meat of it at 70. If anybody's just a listener, they're not watching the video, and Bob is fit. He's sitting here looking great at 70
years
old.
That's nice of you.
Yeah, I'm about to go home and work out after this before my dinner tonight. But as you sit here at 70, after retiring, after all the success you've had, all the success you have in your life, you know, when you talk about your kids, when you talk about your wife, you're sitting in a pretty good spot in the world. But going forward from this moment, from this seat, when you get out of this seat, what's your why when you step into your office after this interview, when you step out into the world? What's your why going forward in life?
Well, it's such a good question. I have to ask myself, why am I working this hard, you know, this late into life? What is it about me and the world that drives me as much as it does? Why?
Why
is it? I don't know the answer, really. I'm not sure. Maybe it's what we talked about earlier, but this notion of always needing to feel fulfilled. You'd think that I would have already felt that, but I'm still going at it. So
yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, it's something about it, right? Like, you can win championships, you can reach what people say, like, that's the mountaintop, but it's fleeting. It's for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's like, okay, that's over. Now what? And so it's that why is that?
You have to ask yourself, is that healthy or not healthy? I'm not sure, but exactly. Why? I don't know.
Well, you got something to say?
I have one last question. Walter, the why was, is anything that you're excited for Disney? I know with Disney Plus, I've heard there was something else coming out.
With ESPN?
With ESPN and Disney.
Oh, well, Disney.
Well,
oh,
here?
Yes.
I'm excited about a lot of things. The great part about this job is, you know, we do so many things. So, you know, we got big movies coming out. Sometimes I'm anxious about them, too. They're not all as good as I'd like them to be. when they're not, I try really hard to help the team make them better. So I'm excited about a lot of that.
And any new platforms, any new?
ESPN launching, you know, we call it a flagship in about a year. The ability to get ESPN and all of these features direct to consumer is pretty exciting to me. I get excited about new theme park attractions, and I have a lot. I got a long list.
I'm glad you said that. First of all, ESPN new. I love that. Especially when I think about, you know, more content is coming. Mm-hmm. Right? We think about the WNBA now. We think about
women's college basketball.
Oh, I mean, it's here. It is here to stay, and it ain't going nowhere. And so, Inside Out 2.
Oh, I'm very excited about that.
So I'm glad you brought that up. You're very. This is the big movie, right? This is. It's come out in what? In June.
Yeah. We got a big one before that, and Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. But okay.
Well, I'm. It's big for me because just filmed with Carmelo Anthony. We just filmed a promo.
Yes, that's Inside right. Out I was supposed to bring that up. And thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm glad
that
you brought
looks
that up.
Really funny.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool. So yeah. I'm excited about Inside Out 2 because we're in a promo for it. That's coming. That will be starting in the Eastern Conference Finals pretty soon.
That's so, right.
Yeah. Big summer for us.
How is Melo? Is he all right? I saw he was at the Knick game the other night.
Oh, yeah. He's Melo. He's exactly what his name says, but he's doing good. So we had a good day shooting. Was that yesterday?
It was yesterday.
Part of the podcast, but I grew up in New York, and I actually have season tickets to the Knicks right behind the Knick bench.
Oh, really?
And, of course, he played for them for years. So my boys, when they were really young, I'd bring them to Knick games. And they still say how the announcer at Madison Square Garden is Carmelo Anthony.
He does. Every time he announces him when he comes to the game. I'm glad I now have a friend who has courtside seats somewhere at the Knicks game. It's hard to get tickets. I tried to get tickets last year.
I couldn't get them. Playoff. They look pretty good. They look fun. They're a fun team to watch.
Yeah, as long as you, I couldn't get tickets last year. I had to go, to a third party to get some tickets to the Miami Heat Knicks game.
They're behind the Knick bench, so they're not courtside.
That's good enough.
My Clipper seats are courtside.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, Bob. Hopefully, we have more opportunities to talk. We've been in multiple rooms together over the years,
and museums
in LA and in New York. I cannot wait to the next time. But I appreciate you for always being gracious. In those rooms and in those spaces, and can't wait to see what's next.
Thanks for your time. Thanks.
Yeah, thank interview. You for your time.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Bob Iger.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.